Welcome to yet another MCM Comic-Con podcast special. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Mark.
And this time we're focusing on the MCM London Comic-Con. It was our second time at the event and it was superb. Throughout the podcast, we're going to be bringing you some really cool interviews with some of the people we met. And we're also going to be discussing the sights and sounds of the convention. So, let's get started.
So to kick things off on this episode, we have an amazing interview with Gillian Anderson, the star of Hannibal, Robot Overlords, X-Files, and The Fall. So here we go.
So Skip to the End are here at the London MCM Comic Con with Gillian Anderson, one of the stars of Robot Overlords. Gillian, thank you so much for joining us.
No, pleasure to be here.
And how have you found the convention today?
Well, I came in and immediately went to the panel, which was entertaining, big, friendly, and seemed to go all right.
And what have you thought to the people in costume today, the cosplayers?
Well, I have to say, having been to a few Comic-Cons now, that the Brits really come out in force with their costumes. I've been to a few where people don't really dress up that much, except for maybe wear like a scary T-shirt or something, but the proper costumes are exquisite here. They're really great. So I get very excited by that. Took a couple of pictures.
Fantastic. So you're here promoting Robot Overlords at the moment.
Yeah.
Fantastic film. For people out there that haven't seen the film yet, can you kind of give us an idea of what to expect for those people?
Well, So the film starts, you see a kind of a family indoors in a home, and you soon learn that they've been locked indoors for 3 years and that robots have taken over the earth. And through the course of the film, the kids find a way to break out without being killed by the robots. And they start an adventure in search of their dad, who's been missing for a few years. And so I play the mum of one of the kids and surrogate mum to a couple of the others. And we go on an adventure that involves Ben Kingsley at some point. And lots of robots, and it's a proper family, British family science fiction film, and I'm very pleased with it. It's great fun to watch and a great adventure, and by rights scary and funny and sweet and tender, and it's good.
It's the perfect balance, and like you said, it's the best family film I've seen in a long time, where everyone can watch it, my grandparents, my kids, everything. It's fantastic.
Great.
How was it came about that you got involved in this film? I mean, it's quite different from some of the stuff you've done previously.
Well, I understand how I fit into the science fiction genre.
Yeah.
You know, I get asked to do science fiction stuff quite a lot, And I just really liked the script, and after talking with John, the director and writer, he felt like I understood what his vision was for it, and I felt like he had a really good sense of how he wanted it all to come together, and I just felt like I wanted to be a part of that journey with him, and I wanted to work with Ben, of course, which was a big pull. So I was asked, and I said yes.
Brilliant.
Excellent. So we here at Skip to the End are actually really big fans of the Hannibal TV series as well, which, of course, you play a role in as well.
Yeah.
So how has that been to get involved in? Has that been fun?
It has been fun. You know, the first couple seasons, my character, Bedelia de Maurier, the scenes are pretty much her sitting across from Hannibal, and I play his therapist as Bedelia, and pretty basic but intense conversations that the two of us have. And this third season, the end of the second season sees the two of us possibly eloping together, definitely on a plane together, going somewhere to. Somewhere in Europe, and so the third season will see where exactly they go and what they get up to, and also to what degree Bedelia is privy to what Hannibal's up to, whether she is complicit or not. And they get up to some pretty interesting
stuff. I'm getting so excited sitting here. I'm like, we've got to wait weeks yet.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's not that bad, isn't it?
No,
is
it's about, a couple of about weeks, 3 weeks, yeah.
Not too long to wait.
We're very
not
excited.
So bad.
We've got the trailer now, so we are getting to see a lot more.
Oh, yeah, it wouldn't play on my computer. I need to figure out.
It's
good.
It's good, right? Yeah.
And speaking about your connection there to science fiction, of course, you're going to be stepping back into Dana Scully's shoes with the revival of The X-Files. What are your thoughts about getting back to grips with that character?
Well, getting back to the character, I'm fine with, and I, you know, it's going to be fun. It'll be all of us back together again, but older and wiser. And I mean, I know that we'll make the most of it, and it'll be really weird, and it'll probably be more fun and more exhausting at the same time. But yeah, I'm psyched. Still in denial, but I'm psyched.
Is there anything that you can tell us about the upcoming season, or are you sworn to secrecy?
I don't know. I think they probably expect secrecy from me, but I don't know if you'd really want me to tell you anything.
Yeah, we like to wait and then be treated.
Yes. Not that I know all that much, but I can tell you that Mulder's back.
That's quite useful.
Yeah. It wouldn't be the same without
him. Don't say I didn't give you anything.
We never would.
So also you're involved in The Fall, so do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
We have done 2 seasons, and we're going to do a 3rd season. Start shooting in November. Haven't seen the script yet, but know a little bit about where the storylines are probably going to go, and I have 1,000% faith in Alan Kubert, our writer and our director and producer, to deliver the most extraordinary script. So I'm not concerned about that. They're all very pleased that I get to come back and play Stella again, because she's one of my favourite characters, and
Have you found any differences from working in TV on this side of the pond as opposed to the extensive work you've done in the States?
It is different, yeah, it is. I mean, it's first of all, we do a proper hour of television. A lot of the stuff over there is a 42-minute hour because of all the commercials. So in order to film that extra 18 minutes, it's actually a few extra days. We used to shoot an episode in 8 days on The X-Files, and now for The Fall it's about 10 or 11 days per episode, and you feel that in it, you know. First of all, it exists in the script before you start filming, but you also feel it on set, and the space that you have in scenes to kind of take your time, and it's just a different feel. And there's a lot of respect here for the process, that I think is the same in filmmaking over there, but not necessarily in some TV world. It's such a business, and turnover is high and stakes are high, and so I think some of that gets lost. The process, the enjoyment of the process, gets lost on the way over there. So it's different.
We're going to call it a day there, but we just wanted to thank you for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak with you today.
Thank
you very much
for
your time.
Thanks
a lot. It means a lot.
Well then, boys, did you ever think we'd be able to just sit down and talk to Gillian Anderson?
I did not.
No.
Yeah, I did, yeah. I thought, you know, we'd eventually get to that level, because we're amazing.
After 6 months, yeah. It's pretty good.
Pretty good, isn't it?
Pretty happy with that.
She might be, like, the busiest woman in TV right now. The fact that she's working on 3 ongoing shows.
It's mad. I mean, literally, the rest of her year is going to be over Europe for Hannibal promotion, over in America for The Fall. X-Files is going to be in America. She's literally, I think X-Files is 2016 as well.
Yeah.
We're not going to see her again.
Yeah, and she found time to skip to the end at the MCM London Comic Con.
That's what we do. We try to get some info out of her, didn't we? Trying to get a little inside scoop on what to expect from X-Files, but the biggest scoop she could give us is that Mulder's going to be in it. Cheers.
Spoilers alert, but yeah, it's... I'm still in a bit of shock that actually happened when I keep looking at the picture, which is on our Instagram, skip to the end the podcast. I do need that picture to really actually go, God, that actually happened.
Yeah.
It was surreal, and it felt like the Queen coming in the room, didn't it?
She's a consummate professional about everything, isn't she, as well?
Every answer
she gave was, it was warm, funny, but with that air of professionalism that, you can tell someone like she has.
She was everything you wanted her to be, really, wasn't she, in terms of an interviewee and a person?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely gorgeous as well. Really, really beautiful woman. And just, yeah, I'm really looking forward to Hannibal season 3 now.
Yeah, me too. Starts very soon. Is it next month?
Yeah.
Can't wait.
Like I said, I was already, but after meeting it and hearing about it, it sounds like they had a great time on set as well.
That's going to be crazy when we're watching Hannibal and you see like Bedelia Du Maurier and you go, yeah, I met her. Yeah. I met her. She's all right.
Surreal. Attending the Comic-Con this time around as well were three of the stars from TV's Arrow. So we had Rila Fukushima, who plays Katana, Carl Yun, who plays Masio, and we had Willa Holland, who of course plays Thea Queen as well.
How is it meeting fans of the show? Is it across the pond, I guess?
They're awesome. They're really very well-adjusted, normal fans that love everything comics. Yeah.
Fantastic. So obviously, in Arrow Season 3... all three of you have been on quite an emotional journey, more than anything. I mean, there's a lot made about the physical demands of the show. How are the emotional demands?
For me, it was a long journey. Because, first of all, like, this Arrow is my first American TV show, which I've done. Mm-hmm. So I can't believe how... Willa and Carl, Steven, Like, you are doing, 3 years, and then, I have no idea how they manage, how you guys manage, whole, 8-month journey. But so when I finished, I was like, I made it. yes, I made it.
Yeah, when you get to the end, there's definitely a sigh of relief. Mm. But then, unfortunately, I went right back to work right after. I had, 3 days off and then nothing. But the emotional stuff is... it's sometimes really difficult. The scene with in the end of season 2 when we had to kill off Susanna Thompson, the Moira death scene. I mean, that was not easy stuff, and it was emotionally draining. Let alone the fact that we were shooting out in the freezing cold. It was raining. It was 5 in the morning. By the time we finished that, so from midnight to 5 in the morning, we're just crying our eyes out, just miserable. So it worked for the the feelings and everything like that. But it was also really sad stuff, because we all had a very special connection, and all of us were really close. So when anybody leaves, it gets really sad. So, yeah.
I mean, obviously you guys filmed for quite a while together over season 3. So like you mentioned there, when someone does leave, how difficult is that?
It's very, very hard. Coming from day one with some people, it's been a tough one. Losing Susanna was probably the toughest for me. But I know that there's been a bunch, and I know losing Colton. I mean, not that we're losing Colton. he could only be coming back. But just, the idea of not having certain people on the show, it daunts you a bit.
This is a very demanding show physically, emotionally, mentally, just your thought process. I've never seen a group of people work harder on anything ever in my life. The hours that they put in. It's very admirable, and you feel like I felt like I was a part of a special fraternity of hardworking, kick-ass, entertainment soldiers. Yeah. Really,
And just finally, on a slightly more upbeat note, what was your favorite scene to film?
Shooting Steven in the arm. It's an easy question. Easy question to answer.
I can't pick one. But, the scene with Carl, the episode 22nd was pretty emotional. Like that whole episode, I was crying most of the scenes. So I was I was trying. End of the day, I'm like, oh,
Yeah, I can't pick just one, but anytime I had a chance to hold a automatic machine gun. that was fun.
Yeah, really, really cool guys to speak to there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great show as well. Mm-hmm. And something that you touched upon there, which I thought was a great question, was about the sort of emotional toll that it takes on them as well as physically, because the three of them have had really sort of deep emotional journeys this season. So it was great to meet them. I thought it was interesting that we got to meet Rila, because she's a Japanese actress and she's not been in many English-speaking shows or films. She was in The Wolverine, wasn't she? And you can tell, obviously, English is not her first language. So it was interesting interviewing her, and obviously everyone was quite patient with her.
Yeah.
But she gave some really great answers.
She did, and Willa Holland as well, and Carl Yoon were absolute pleasures to speak to. They both were really engaged, because sometimes you can at these conventions have an interview with someone who doesn't really feel like they're interested in being there.
Yeah.
But these guys really were. They were really happy to be there. They seemed, you know, very engaging to talk to. Mm-hmm. And Willa was an absolute delight.
My favourite thing of the interview was at the end of it, Willa said to you, "Well done," as if you were on work experience, which I thought was quite nice.
Am I not?
On that note, I've got some good news. We're going to keep you on. You've passed with 5 gold stars.
Oh, amazing.
Wicked.
Thanks, guys.
He's passed his probation.
Well done.
Congrats. One of the favourite things about these cons, and we're all very guilty of it, is spending sheds loads of money on lots of merch.
Yeah, every time.
We can never, ever be controlled and say, "I would have spent a tenner." We all came back with bags full of merch, t-shirts, hoodies, there's figures, there's
comics,
loads of stuff. There's absolutely loads. Yeah. One of our favourite stores out there is Headshot Clothing. Everyone should check them out on Facebook and Twitter. They do some amazing horror-themed t-shirts. And they've been good enough again to give us a prize. So they've just done a new design for Stephen King's It. It's a really, really good design with Pennywise on there. Check it out on Instagram and Facebook, because it's superb. But they've been good enough for us to give this away. So to win this, all you need to do is let us know who wrote the novel It. All you need to do is go on Twitter, which is @STTEPodcast. Put your answer on there. Or go on Facebook, facebook.com/skiptheendpodcast. Or drop us an email, podcast@skiptheend.co.uk, and we'll announce the winner on our own episode in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, and just check out the website, headshot.clothing, because there are some fantastic t-shirt designs on there. There really are. And I don't like plugging things or anything like that, but this is a stall I'm happy to say, check it out, because I honestly believe these are some of the best designs I've seen.
And what was the one that you got?
I got a Walking Dead t-shirt that was amazing.
Yeah, and I got a t-shirt for a film called Brain Dead, which I've not seen, because it's a horror film, I assume, Mark. This is your field of expertise.
It is, yeah. It's a brilliant horror.
And I've not seen it. Horrors aren't really my cup of tea, but the design was so good that I just had to get the shirt. So thanks a lot to the guys from Headshot. I was lucky enough to have a brief chat with John Noble, one of the stars of Sleepy Hollow and previously one of the stars of Fringe, which is one of my favourite sci-fi TV shows of all time. He's also been in a couple of the Lord of the Rings films, had a long career on TV, film and stage. So here's John. So in the conversation we've just had there, you've talked about many of your different projects, from voice work to film to TV to theatre as well. Do you have a great love? Is there a particular type of work that you prefer?
I don't back myself into any corners. I don't. I love all of these fields. I mean, the return to stage over the last couple of years has been surprisingly wonderful, because I'd spent so much of my life doing it as a director and actor, and working in New York where the standards are so high and such great roles I had. So that was a joy. But then, you know, if you work on film, it can be fun too. It's different, but.
Go and conquer.
Television I like simply because it's so fast. I mean, there is no time to double-guess yourself. You're thrown basically without rehearsals. You get the scripts really late, and then you have to go in and improvise a lot, not with the script, but with your performance, and then trust your first impressions. If you don't, you'll go mad. Seriously. And I don't know how some actors do it, those that are nervous about lines, but I'm not so. So I love that pace. I get an adrenaline high out of that. Voiceover work is a very different technique, but I started there as well, so I love going back to it again. And you know, over a long career, you get pretty proficient at what you do, and that helps too, when you feel comfortable within your technique, and I do in all those fields. So, no, I don't have a preference. Each in its own way is beautiful. And there may be other areas that come up, and, you know, provided you give it your complete attention, complete attention, and don't treat anything as second best. I mean, if I went and did a commercial for Colgate toothpaste, I would treat that exactly the same way as I'd treat doing anything else.
Sure.
Because there's no cheap options.
And out of the work that you've done over your long and varied career, do you have something that's closest to your heart? Is there a favourite or piece of work that you're most proud of?
There are several stage plays, but I think as something up here, you'd have to say Lord of the Rings was astonishing, but then Fringe is my favourite.
Fringe was a great piece of work, and it seems now that with all these genre shows that have come and gone, there's always chances of a renewal or a reboot, or they come back. If that came across to you, the idea of bringing back Fringe, would it be something you'd be interested in?
Oh yes, I'd certainly talk about it. I don't believe it'll happen. There has been talk and a lot of people. The interesting thing about Fringe is that it has now had a complete rebirth, and it's probably three times more popular than it ever was because of the Netflix release. I mean, seriously, through the roof. And it is one of the great shows.
Really? Oh, well, I miss it dearly.
I would. I mean, it's a matter of can you reproduce something that was great once? I wouldn't want to go back and do anything more on the Rings team because I thought I couldn't. I don't know if I could ever replace that. So what am I going to do, stand still? Whether you could do something with Fringe, I don't know. So I'm not racing out. I'm saying yes, I would love to play the character again, but I don't know if we can reproduce something worthy of the aura that Fringe now has.
Of course, it was very cool for me to interview John Noble. As I say, I love Fringe, and his character Walter Bishop was one of my favourite characters on TV for several years. So it was great to interview him, and I really like his attitude towards work. Like, we've interviewed a few people over the last few months, and a question I've asked multiple people is, you know, what's your great love, what do you prefer, film, TV, stage, etc. And I love the fact that his attitude is, I'll do it all, I just want to make sure that the work is good. And he used an example of being in a toothpaste commercial. He would work just as hard to make that good as he would for any film, whether it's Lord of the Rings, Fringe, or whatever.
A massive respect to the guy as well. I know he was very in demand to do interviews, and I saw that when people were coming up to him, when he was going from store to the green room, they were trying to stop him and do interviews, and he didn't say no to anybody. He sat there, he was doing interviews in the lift, on the main floor. Hats off to the guy, really, really dedicated to his fans.
Yeah, he clearly cares about what he does as well, which is unbelievably important in any walk of life, let alone in the acting world, because like you say, there are actors out there who clearly just cash grab slightly, and will walk into anything, not really care, not really do a good job. Great to hear that he actually treats everything the same. He's just happy to work.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great to meet him.
Up next, one of my favourite interviews I've ever done was John Schnapp and Holly Payne, the writer, director and producer of The Death of Superman Lives. What happened?
Going back to the start of the project, there are many, many films in Hollywood that get the green light but then for whatever reason don't go. Right. So why was it this particular one? What was it about this that drew you, what inspired you?
Well, for me, I mean, it's like, it was obviously I was aware of Kevin's script writing on it and Tim Burton and Nicolas Cage and then it falling apart. And then about 2 years after it fell apart, some artwork came online. It might have been in Starlog or Starburst. It was in one of the sci-fi mags that I always get. And it was a drawing of Superman in outer space with like a black outfit with a silver S. And it just had a very Mobius look to it. And it ended up being like Sylvain Dupree is how you say his name, who was the artist who drew that. And we ended up interviewing him. I ended up working alongside him, not with him, on a project years later. That's how I got to know him. And then, you know, he's a funny story. He didn't want to be interviewed. It was very hard to get him, you know, back and forth. He back and forth. And he's like one of the more dynamic interviews in the piece. He has a very strong
opinion. Not a fan of the superhero franchise.
Yeah,
to
he thinks it's choking Hollywood. It's choking.
He was so much fun to interview.
In fact, when he wrote me, he was like, if you think I'm going to talk about the curl of Superman's cape, you'll be disappointed. I was like, please say that on film. You don't understand.
Say that.
Yeah, so I was like, so a lot of the interviews were like, you know, like drinking gold. So I kind of, you know, was like, you're just saying amazing stuff. So, so the process for me was like getting into this artwork. And for years, I just was like, would have been a really interesting film. Kevin's thing came out in 2004, and then Superman Returns came out in 2006, and I was, you know, unfortunately bored with the film. She woke me up twice in the theater. I fell asleep. And it was really one of those things that I realized the idea of redoing Richard Donner's world is cool, but actually redoing it is not cool. It's sort of like, that's something that happened and it should be left alone. It doesn't need to be lovingly re-remembered. It can only be remembered by seeing Superman 1 and 2. And in fact, don't see 3 or 4. You know, it's like one of those things that, oh, I'm just going to start from where we think
unless
it should jump off.
Yeah,
I mean, it's, you know, so... So then, after I saw that film, I went back in my head and I was like, boy, that Superman Tim Burton one, at least it had Brainiac in it. I'm sick of Lex Luthor buying land.
Yeah.
I want something different in my Superman movies. And I'm a comic book reader, so I don't, the films don't have as much impact on me. It's not that I don't care about the superhero films, but since I already enjoy the original medium, these are just different iterations to me. I don't care, really, if they change the costume. Like, I use Wolverine as a good example. Like, people started crying because they had a 6'5" guy. He didn't have the yellow spandex.
And now, like, they can't live without him.
Yeah, you know, don't retire, you Jackman. So it's like, I think fanboy culture sometimes holds stuff too tight to the chest, and it's like, don't change my character. And then once they see it, then that's the character they don't want you to change. And Heath Ledger is a perfect example.
I was just about to say that.
Someone who, like, everyone was hating on it. In fact, even with the pictures that were released,
we live in a cyclical culture
because that's what's happening right now with Jared Leto.
It's exactly the same thing.
It is cyclical.
And it's going to happen when Suicide Squad comes out. People are going to be on that tip of
Ben
that
Affleck.
Joker.
Come on.
Yeah. You know? It's a thing that people, especially with the internet culture, the trolling and the desire to be heard and scream about something. Something that you're very ill-informed about and actually have nothing to do
Michael
with.
Michael Keaton.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's our film. We used Michael Keaton as the linchpin to it because in '88 there was no internet. So, but there are people like writing in thousands of letters hit Warner Brothers in DC about how dare you hire Mr. Mom and Beetlejuice and a comedian and a short guy and this and he doesn't look like Batman. Then the movie comes out, they're like, man, Michael Keaton is my Batman.
He made Michael Keaton's head into the back of their head.
Eating their words.
Yeah. So. I mean, that's kind of what the culture that we live in. So people are very reactionary. And I understand the reactionary aspect to it. I mean, even Watchmen. Like, I loved Zack Snyder's Watchmen.
Watchmen is one of my favorite graphic novels.
Yeah.
And that... I bum out sometimes about the Alan Moore predicament, is what I would call it.
Yeah,
a little bit like, stop being a warlock and a weirdo. You know, just let people, look, you wrote it, don't be so weird about it. Yeah, I did. I cannot be defamed or whatever. It's like, you know, I get it, though, because so many of the films that he was involved in, like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, is garbage.
It's a garbage film.
Yeah, that's another film. That's another film I fell asleep in. Yeah.
It's completely...
It's embarrassing.
Let's not even talk about it.
All right. Watchmen is a film that they changed the ending where it's not a squid.
Yeah.
But so many people were up in arms about it, but then you have to remind people you have a two-hour movie. This is not... Daredevil, where you have 10 hours to tell a soap opera like story, which comic books are soap operas.
And it works for that medium.
It works for that medium, but if you had the squid, you would have to talk about the artist colony. You would have to talk about all these different things that led up to the building of the squid to create that shock to ruin people's brains. So henceforth, they were like, well, we'll just tie it into Manhattan. It made perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
I think that's an exquisite film. That's why I'm not worried about Batman v Superman with all these characters. You're jamming too many characters in. It's like, look at Civil War. It's got 100 characters. Yeah. They keep adding. They're like, Hulk might be in. So, I got into the film after Superman Returns and started... I had a little folder on my desktop, and I would just... Every couple months, I'd search Superman Lives concept art. Because I was like, oh, I want to find out about this film, just for myself personally, like, what else is out there? And so I read the different scripts that Kevin had written. Wesley Strick's script was unavailable at that time. Dan Gilroy's script was available. So, you know, I read all that stuff over a couple of years, and I would every once in a while look for the artwork. And then in 2000, I believe it was 2010 or 11, Steve Johnson's light-up rainbow outfits had come on online on YouTube. And that was like, a lot of people were like, well, that movie would have been horrible. Look at that. And I was like, well, if I look at the script, I think that's not the suit. That's actually this.
No spoilers, but, you know.
It's not a spoiler. It's online.
In the teaser we saw at the last con, we saw about that costume.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to be the costume.
No, it was just one segment of the film, and not a very long one.
Yeah, so, and then I met Steve Johnson. We were out at a Meltdown event. Meltdown is a comic book store in L.A. So I met Steve Johnson and talked with him a little bit about, you know, all the different films. He's worked on Videodrome, Ghostbusters. He created Slimer.
Freaked. Let's not forget.
Freaked. So talked with him about a bunch of different films. And then I mentioned, you know, he went to the bathroom. I was like, at first I was like, he looks familiar. And I Googled him. And, of course, he's in that footage of the Superman Lives costume tests. So I basically, when he came back, I was like, hey, man, so you made those Superman outfits, right? And he, like, all of a sudden his face changed, and he looked, like, a little gaunt. He's like, yeah, no, I made that. And he seemed like he didn't want to talk about it. So we went out to dinner afterwards and with some of our friends, and I told him that story. And basically, one of my friends was like, hey, you should do a documentary about it. And another friend was like, you should do it on Kickstarter. And I was like...
He was English. So yeah,
you should do it on Kickstarter.
Flawless.
It's pretty good, right, guys?
I'm liking that.
Oi, you should do it on Kickstarter. I'm doing it even worse now, just to make it worse.
You've clearly been here quite a bit.
Yeah. I really hang out in English pubs quite a bit. Oi, get me another pint, yo.
Yo.
Yo, son, get me another pint, sweaty. My sweaty nuts. My sweaties here. That's for my sweaties. Anyway, a couple months pass, and I was like, because I said no. I was like, nah, I direct stuff that's narrative. I direct, you know, mainly cartoons at the time. I've done a bunch of television, other live action stuff. So it's all always been narrative. I'm not a documentary guy. I had cut a documentary once, like 10 years ago. The idea, though, wouldn't leave me alone. I was sort of like, this has got to, you know, why not? It would be exciting. It's a change of pace for me. I think I could do it. If I could raise the money, I added up what I thought I would need to make, like take off like 8 months and do the film.
At that time, you thought it was good.
Yeah, I thought I could do easily in 8 months. I'll have it ready for San Diego Comic Con 2013. Yeah. Look out.
Yes, it's coming.
Yeah, it's coming. You know,
the
I was
dates
like,
kept coming and going.
Yeah,
and
so
like,
January, I ran the Kickstarter, and it exploded. Like the first week, it was like $35,000. So it was sort of like a litmus test to see if other people are like-minded and interested in the same thing. And we found out that like there were a lot of other people who wanted to know about the Superman Lives movie. In fact, I got a lot of letters from people who were like, I was thinking of doing the same thing. And I was like, aha, I beat you to it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, get in line.
Yeah, I know.
Well, it's a very diverse film for a lot of reasons, but there's so many different aspects that people are interested in, whether it's Superman, whether it's Tim Burton, whether it's Kevin Smith, whether it's Nicolas Cage.
It kind of crosses a lot of boundaries.
It does, and that's where, you know, so there's this wide, broad interest in it. And so we found out very quickly by doing the Kickstarter that people wanted to see it.
So yeah, I mean, one of my favorite interviews we've done, it was a real passion project from this film, and you could tell when he was talking about it.
You can, and you get the impression that he could talk about the project for hours, and I would be more than happy to listen to him do that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of John anyway, and this kind of interview has been in the pipeline for a few weeks, and I was always building it up, thinking when I speak to him, I hope he's that guy that we've seen on the video, and, you know, it was everything we could have done. We could have sat there for hours and hours and hours and listened to them both. They were both brilliant, and what a beautiful couple, you know. They're both... built this project together. They're both heavily involved in it. You see how proud Holly is of the work she's done. Also John, it's just amazing, absolutely amazing to see them in the editing room just sitting there deciding on which bits to leave in and take out.
Yeah,
that's a marriage ready to happen.
It's brilliant as well, because you can tell, like, as the interview kind of went on, you could tell that she had developed a passion for it as well.
Oh yeah, big time. Yeah, it wasn't just a job.
So, I mean, while we were talking to him, it actually became a passion of mine as well. Mm. And I think when we left the interview, we all kind of looked at each other and thought, you know what, that's a great interview. And we're all really passionate about the film now. We really want to see it. Unfortunately, due to other commitments with interviews at the actual convention, we couldn't see it there and then. But we decided that when it does come out in July, we are going to do a full-length special on it.
Yeah, because we spoke to the guys at length. I mean, we've only used a short snippet of the interview on the podcast here, but we're going to put out the full sort of half an hour length interview with them, our review of the film, and hopefully we're going to try and catch up with him again, aren't we, Mark?
That's correct. Follow up after we've seen the film, and then we'll put it all out as a big package. And fair play. You're in for a big treat.
Can't wait. I honestly can't.
We We also had the chance to meet a couple of cast members from Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We met Ian DeCastiger, who plays Fitz, and we met Nick Blood, who plays Lance Hunter, and this is what they had to say. Thank you for joining us, guys.
Hey.
And obviously, Nick, you joined the series in season two. What was it like for you as an actor and as a person joining this well-oiled machine?
Well, it was pretty, it was kind of nuts, like I was saying earlier. I wrapped on a show here, flew out the next morning to L.A., you know, was getting up, I wrapped at like 8 o'clock, flew out at... got up at like 5 a.m. the next day, landed in LA, was picked up, driven to set, and was straight into costume and makeup to start shooting. So it was kind of just thrown in at the deep end, which I think was the best way, really, because I was quite anxious about moving to LA. I hadn't intended to, you know, so I think it was good just to get thrown in the deep end, and then very, very relieved and very happy that everyone was so kind of welcoming and so sound. Like I had a feeling they would be, because I'd had Skype chats with the execs and the showrunners, and they're such lovely people that who are kind of friends now, you know. So I knew they'd be cool.
And Ian, you've been with the show since the start, of course, and the show stands alone, but it's part of a larger beast, the whole MCU. Do you ever feel the pressure of being a cog in that machine and having to service the larger narrative?
No, I tend not to think about it too much. Like, our story is quite contained, even though there's sometimes references and things like that. You know, we have enough kind of going on day to day with ours that kind of takes up most of your thinking space. But yeah, there are times where it kind of hits you, and a lot of times, like, I suppose there can be a set of pressure too, but actually it's just quite a cool feeling to be like, oh cool, that connects to this and things like that.
And you mentioned there the showrunners, so you guys, what connection have you had with people like Joss Whedon? Have you actually spoken to Joss?
Oh yeah, of course, yeah. And the show is obviously kind of, he oversees everything, and then Jed and Marissa, Jed is his brother, are brilliant at kind of, you know, steering that ship, and Jeff Bell and so on. We're very fortunate to have those guys, and they just, you know, they're just like your friends, they're just part of a family, really. There's no kind of hierarchy in that sense, is
yeah,
there?
Yeah, they're very
the
good at what they do. Yeah.
And how's it been for you stepping into a more sort of light-hearted role after playing the role in Babylon, which was a copper with basically PTSD?
Yeah. You know, it's fun. It's just nice doing different stuff. You know, it was quite mad doing the scene that I've rapped on back, because it was Babylon I was shooting just before I started. This was this scene where I go in and like kick off in this pub. Where I found out that one of my friends has betrayed me, and I go in there and just whack this guy and get thrown across the table, and it's just, and then I find out that actually it was my best friend who betrayed me and let me down. So it was probably the most intense kind of section of scenes from that series, and then come to this. It's, you know, it's just nice doing different stuff, and I've never done anything, you know, with all those gadgets and all the kind of crazy sets and, you know, amazing, you know, locations that we go to, and you know, flying up in helicopters and all this sort of stuff. So that side of it's been a real kind of, you know, you have to really you know, remind yourself and go, I'm very fortunate to be doing what I'm doing. You know, it's so nice to have a job that takes you to these mad places, and just things like I went up in a helicopter for the first time, and it was incredible.
Magical.
You know, it was.
And Ian, you've been involved in some other project recently. You were part of Ryan Gosling's directorial debut, Lost River. How was that?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, one of the best times I've ever had, and he's a really special director in person, I think, and I think he, you know, it's probably the thing I'm most proud to be a part of. You know, it was a really cool thing to do, and so I'm excited to see what he does next as well.
How did you get involved in that film?
Just, you know, kind of the natural way, like through agents and stuff like that, and then met him, and it was a cool kind of process, and it was kind of like a. It was over like a long period of time, but then actually when it happened, it was quite quick. So it just kind of just happened quite quickly.
And did you have to audition for Ryan Gosling?
Yeah.
Was that nerve-wracking?
Yes and no, yeah. I mean, he's a pretty chilled out guy, so he makes you feel quite comfortable. So that was good.
It was really great to speak to those guys. I'm a big fan of the show, and I think it's coming on in leaps and bounds. It started off as a kind of villain of the week type show, but then ever since the events of Captain America Winter Soldier, it's had to bring everything that happened in that film into the show, because of course, spoiler alert, S.H.I.E.L.D. implodes in that film, so they then had to translate that into the show as well, and I think the show has really come on a lot since then, and these two guys are an integral part of that, so it was really cool to speak to them.
Yeah, and it's a cast that's quite a solid cast. It's really good. Marvel generally do really well with their casting anyway, And these two guys kind of show that, because I mean, Ian DeCasker, especially as Fitz, is plays a great role in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He's a, you know, really very important character in that respect. And to be honest, I've ever since, like you say, the events, I think it's around about episode 17, 18 of season one, something like that, when it's revealed, obviously, again, spoiler, that Hydra has been living within S.H.I.E.L.D. for years. It just, like you say, it comes on leaps and bounds. And it's an ambitious project because it obviously intertwines with the MCU. But I'm really looking forward to kind of see where they're going with it, because season two isn't done over here yet.
Amazing as well how much time they spent with the fans. I've never seen queues like it to try and meet them. Their panel was completely rounded. I don't think you could get any more people in. I've never seen a press room as busy as that for these guys. They were in demand from the moment they got there until they left, and I didn't see them say no to any signatures or anything. Fair play to the guys. They never stopped.
They never stopped. And during their panel, you could tell that they were friends as well, which is really nice. Sometimes you see these people who work together and you can tell that they're colleagues at best, but these guys were clearly friends as well, and I think that translates to the screen.
There was a lot of bants.
Oh, it was Banton Deck all the way.
Big time. Definitely. It was Eric Banton all over the shop.
Big time.
Bantosaurus Rex.
This wouldn't be a Skip to the End podcast without a top three.
Yeah.
He's right.
Let's do it. Ben, tell me your third favourite thing about London Comic Con.
I would say number three was interviewing Christian Brune, who is one of the stars of Orphan Black. It's a really cool show. Anyone who's not familiar with it, go and check it out. And Adam and I were lucky enough to interview him on the MCM Buzz stage, which was filmed and is up on our YouTube channel and the MCM Buzz YouTube channel. So you can go and view that interview. But Christian was just a great guy, wasn't he, Adam?
Oh, hilarious.
Such a pro and so funny. I think he mentions at one point during the interview that he comes from a comedy background, and you can tell. And it was just great fun interviewing him.
Yeah, it was. And for him, it was just kind of he turned up, he kind of went, oh, where am I going? And then he's like, oh, probably take my gum out. Took his gum out. So I was sitting there thinking, maybe he's not done one of these before. But when we got him warmed up, he was so funny.
I thought he was great, yeah.
Adam, what about you, number three?
Probably Annie Wershing.
Oh.
Me and Mark, we had the pleasure of interviewing on the Buzz stage, which again, is on YouTube. So check it out. But yeah, she's amazing. She was so warm, funny, friendly. I'm not a huge fan of The Vampire Diaries, if I must say, but I'm a huge fan of 24, which she was in.
Yeah.
And she mentioned in the interview that she was also a big fan of 24 before she actually got cast in it. So great to hear. So check out the interview. But she was amazing, wasn't she, Mark?
Very much so. Mine, God, it's hard to pick three, isn't it? Felicia Day.
Yeah.
One of the most popular guests again at this con.
Oh, by a distance.
Every single person there wanted to meet her.
Oh, she's like geek queen, isn't she?
Yeah, queen of geeks, big time. But we got some time with her. Luckily, we got this filmed and it's on our YouTube. Check it out, because she talks about her new book coming out. She talks about working on Supernatural, all about her background. And oh, there's some really good lines from her. So yeah, check that out. Really good.
Yeah, she was talking about she's going to be an upcoming animated series or animated film based on a comic book called Chew, which is one of my favourite books. And the fact that she's going to be involved in that is great.
Yeah, really, really cool. Ben, number two.
John Noble.
Oh, yeah, you loved him.
I geeked out huge for John Noble. Not only is he a great actor, and as I say, I loved him as Walter Bishop in Fringe, there's just something about him. He's like a really nice grandfatherly figure. I just really like the dude.
Yeah, he is. He was a really good guy.
Yeah.
Isn't he doing the voice for Batman?
He's doing the voice of the Scarecrow in Arkham Knight, yeah.
Brilliant.
Hugely looking forward to that.
That's going to be a great game. Good bit of casting.
Well, in kind of the same vein then, I guess, talk about voice actors. My second, Gideon Emery.
Yes.
Done a load of voices for, you know, Final Fantasy, Call of Duty, Mass Effect, all of those, all the big hitters. But also Anatoly in Daredevil.
Yeah.
He's in it for about two episodes, but probably some of the most memorable scenes and episodes you'll find.
Yeah.
And what a guy. He was so friendly, wasn't he? He was awesome.
Yeah, he was very cool. If anyone's not familiar, if anyone out there has seen Daredevil and not entirely familiar with who Gideon Emery is, I'll just say Cardor.
Yeah.
Anyone who's seen the show will know what I mean when I say Cardor.
But he was so fun to talk to.
I'd love to follow this up now with a voice actor, but I've kind of got a voice actor.
Brilliant.
I met John Challis, who, if anyone doesn't know this, it's Boise from Only Fools and Horses.
Yeah.
An absolute legend. I think all of us on the podcast have got a massive place in our heart for Boise. And we got to meet Boise and Marlene. So if you go on our Instagram, we've got a photo up there. But he even did the laugh, didn't he? I'm not going to try and do it because I really can't do an impression.
Yeah, that was one of the things that it kind of, as we were taking the photo, it made me laugh because I wasn't expecting it. And he must get asked to do that all the time.
Yeah.
But we didn't actually ask him. He just went 3, 2, 1 and did it before the photo was taken.
It was great.
And just to get a chance to meet one of your heroes when you're growing up, you know, it's one of the family favourite TV shows. I remember everyone's seen episodes there, classic British TV, some of the best comedy around, and yeah, we got to actually see him in the flesh. It was brilliant.
Should we get him on the show? Boyce cast.
I'd love to. The voice of Boyce.
Let's do it.
Coming soon.
Rolls Boyce.
Brilliant. So number one time, Ben. Favourite part of the whole of London Comic Con. So many to choose from.
Yeah. It's Gillian Anderson.
Of course it is.
God damn. You know, I'm one of the biggest old school X-Files fans you're ever going to meet. It's an all-time legendary show. You know, I'm of the age that I used to buy FHM in the mid-90s when Gillian was on the cover all the time. She's been an idol of mine for a long, long while. So it was great to see her. Plus the fact she's in Hannibal now, which was my favourite show of last year. And so to get to meet her and for her to be as lovely as she was, mm-hmm. was a real thrill.
Keep your eyes posted on our YouTube as well, because that's going to be out there for you to watch. It's a really good, really thorough interview, and yeah, it's fantastic. I can't agree more.
Oh, she was great. Again, I mean, we mentioned earlier, she was the consummate professional, warm mm-hmm. and friendly, and she was just so open with us as well.
Yeah.
So, Adam, number one for you.
Oh, it's got to be Willa, Rila, and Carl from Arrow. Huge fan of the TV series. I can't speak highly enough of Arrow, and these three guys have been in the last season. They've all really kind of proven how good they are now as actors and actresses. Mm-hmm. And it was so great just to meet them in the flesh.
And they were all lovely, but Willa especially was a real live wire, wasn't she? She was great fun.
Number one for me, you probably guessed it, guys.
Yeah.
Holly Payne and John Schnepp. Yeah. I've been talking about this all the way down to London, saying mm-hmm. I can't wait to meet them. It happened. We got one of the best interviews we've ever done, and we've got even more to come. You know, let's be honest about it. We've listened back. It's fascinating, this stuff, and I can't wait for those guys who are listening right now to get the full thing in July, because there's so much in-depth about this film, and when this film comes out on video on demand, check it out, because it's going to blow everyone out of the water.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. I can't wait to speak to them again.
Yeah.
Because once I've seen the film, I'm going to have, I can imagine I'm going to have like 40 or 50 more questions. We're probably going to be on Skype with them for about 3 days.
Probably.
Yeah. It's big time.
So that brings us to the end of yet another Skip to the End MCM Comic Con special. It's the fifth one of these we've done now, lads. Can you believe that?
It's frightening.
It's amazing, like, thinking about the differences. Because MCM has grown mm-hmm. in the last, not even year that we've been actually with them.
Yeah.
I mean, when we attended the October one last year, it was, I mean, I think they're actually 10,000 people up.
Yeah, 122,000 people this weekend.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It's astonishing.
And it was absolutely packed. I think we've got a picture up on our Twitter, is it? That shows how busy it was there. You could barely move. It was fantastic.
And yeah, the caliber of the guests as well, they're now attracting.
Yeah.
Even in October, they were still attracting big guests. Mm-hmm. But right now, I mean, to get three guys from one of the hottest TV series on the planet, and two guys from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., another one of the hottest, Felicia Day,
yeah, she's huge. The fan response to her was amazing.
And Gillian Anderson doing a panel as well.
Of course.
It really is the closest thing you'll get to San Diego in England. Definitely, it's miles above anything at the moment. It makes me just want to go to the next one. I've got to wait 2 months to Manchester. It's frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could spend every weekend at cons. I love it.
Yeah, it's brilliant. We just wanted to say thank you to a lot of the guys who work for MCM. So thank you to Brian, Gary, Charlie, Dave and Josh. And also thank you to Dale and the crew from the National Film and Television School. We really appreciate everything you did for us this weekend.
If you're a fan of this podcast and you're new to Skip to the End, we thank you for taking the time to listen to us. But also, we do put out a fortnightly podcast that includes us watching a new film and reviewing it. We go back and do a rewatch of an old classic, or sometimes a bad classic. We've done competitions.
A bad classic. Yeah.
We do top threes, top fives, lots of different topics. So that's available on iTunes, Podomatic, or if you go to skiptotheend.co.uk, that has all the details there. Also, sign up on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever you want, YouTube, we're there for you, and we hope that you stick around for the near future. And thanks again for listening. Cheers.